Hi, I'm Josh, and it's weird. You cannot find the movie Cherry Falls when you do a Google search, but you can find it on Bing.
Fair. I'm Matt, God. And as far as I can tell, I've just disappointed Josh.
Joshua with his master level bar geese there. That was really.
I'm gonna. I don't think any of this is gonna make it on mic, but I am honestly gonna go lay on the floor for a second. I hope y'all are doing at least as well.
This is Charlie down in Austin. This is Charlie down in Austin. Yeah, I was trying to think about something like Scooby-Doo related, but in terms of Roe, because that's what I think of. But then I was like, that's really not super like great. And I was like, well, no. So like insert dated late 90s Scooby-Doo joke here.
It's yeah, like the whole rut-row thing.
Exactly.
If you can get away with that. I found the movie a little slow, personally. But it was all right. And, you know, we are barely holding it together tonight, but that's fine because it's Horror Show Hot Dog.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about Cherry Falls or Las El Cerise Calle. This movie came out in 2000, which means that my memories of arguing about it with Charlie in college are probably not correct because I graduated college in 2000. But I think it was when we were both living in Phoenix that, and we were watching all kinds of random movies because we didn't have children.
And, yep.
And we used to do stuff. And we watched this thing and I was like, that was really neat. Like, it was a cool idea and Brittany Murphy's awesome. And it was kind of funny. And Charlie was like, that was garbage. And I was like, you're garbage. And then we argued about it. And watching it again, I feel like I owe you an apology because it's not, I don't think it's garbage, but it's not great.
Well, and it's like, it was funny too, because like, as I was telling you before, it was like, you could have told me that you were the one that hated it and I liked it and I would have believed you because I didn't remember. Yeah. And I was like, I remember it because of the name association, but like, I didn't remember what all, you know, all the, what I had actually thought about the damn thing. But watching it now, like, so I have no way of knowing what I thought about it then, but I mean, watching it, you're just like, it is striking how the writing is like real weird and not like in like a good weird way, but it's more just like in a like a like is like what's happening with this script? Because like there's so many choices that occur between like this, like some of the sexualizing. Aspects of the thing and like killing virgins and this and that, whatever. And then like the reveal of the killer component and like some of the motivations of the characters. And like, there's so many moments in this where you just go like, what is happening with whoever wrote this damn thing? Like, this is real crazy. Like, is this even like a script so much? Or is it like, if they're just really working on some personal stuff? Like what's going on with this thing? And it's like, and I wonder if it's because you're 22 years later or whatever, but like, I don't know. It was just like, I mean, a lot of this was just sort of like, there's a lot of cringy stuff where you can't necessarily like, you know, sign it off on just being because it's like old or older, you know? And it's like, so there's a lot of moments where I was like, I'm just like, just legitimately baffled about like every decision.
I was saying to Matt, like there's such a shortage of relatable human behavior in this thing. Where the dialogue is so off, and but what it is, it is a post-Scream slasher where they took exactly the wrong lessons, kind of like the post-Tarantino, where they were just like, oh, so what it is people say fuck and the N-word a lot and they do crimes. Like, yeah. That's not what made Pulp Fiction good, but okay.
And I will fully get it on board with that because I think it does take the. We've talked about this in the retrospectives of various shows of like there's Friday the 13th kids,
yeah,
you know,
Nightmare
Elm Street kids, and this is like 13th kids, and just like, you're like, okay, so like by default, I don't care. And it's like, well, if you don't care, give me a plot reason to care. And they failed at that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just none of that. Yeah, there's no, you're exactly right. There's like, there's none of that meat on the bone necessarily. Like it just doesn't, the framing is not of a body count pile up, but the people are such that like you shouldn't even give even two craps about them, and then that's sort of like it's like neither the two shall meet. Like it doesn't jive. Plus, like some of the characters, Brittany Murphy being the worst offender, not to her fault, of course, but like the sex scene or whatever, like what fucking 50 Shades of Grey bullshit was that from? Like, you know,
most uncomfortable thing I've
God,
seen.
God, oh, jeez, yeah. Okay, you said the right
she
word.
Went
you said
for the exact it, right though. Word.
No, she totally did because God, you know, God bless her. You know, but it was like, so I'm sure she just dove in with both feet. No pun intended. but it was one of those things where it's sort of like, it was like she's a high school kid, and like all the rest of it. Whereas I'm watching that, going like, this scene from fucking Basic Instinct plays more innocent than this does. Like, what in the fuck is going on with this thing?
I love the idea of her being so. Like creepily pervy that he is squicked out.
Yeah.
Because like, he is the douchiest, like sentient bottle of hair gel that ever walked the fucking planet. And yet it was weird when I was like, he's going to be our hero.
I know. Oh,
God.
I know.
Horrible. But this is 90s. Like it's so. It's the legacy of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Scream. That birthed upon the world this like self-aware dudes being obsessive jerks all the time and like all of the really stylized dialogue. And so we got, you know, Urban Legend and Valentine and this. We just like, this is shitty 90s slasher writ large. But at the same time, like, so I had to go and read about this, and the writer wanted it to be a black comedy, like a satire. Mm. And they said once they got to the set, the director wanted it to be a straight horror movie. And they're like, but the premise, sir, the premise is ridiculous on the front. And he's like, yeah, but nope, we're going to play this perfectly straight. And you know, satire is not going to be a thing. Like, but the dialogue is already satirical, sir. So we ended up with this like, ridiculous thing that wasn't able to go dark or funny.
And oh, just weird.
Yeah. Cause apparently it was supposed to be more like Slumber Party Massacre style.
Oh, okay.
Thing. And I could see the shape of that, but think about how little the fact that the guy is killing virgins comes into the show. Like we are act three before they get to the fuck fest.
Yeah.
And I think you got to start the movie there. It was like, what would all these kids be doing? Like, make it fucking American Pie crossed with Halloween.
Yeah.
And then you got something. You had like, we were desperate to lose our virginity before, and holy shit now, like, maybe the balance of power has shifted a little between the boys and the girls. You know, there's something. Give me something.
Yeah, because there's a lot of ground that you can you know, put some stakes into as far as like really, you know, like, yeah, I mean, you said that really, really well. The idea of like American, the kind of American Pie Halloween sort of mushing is like, there's a lot of logic to that. And it was like, it gives you a lot more places to go. Whereas like, this doesn't, like the other thing that got me was the tone. Like I've never, at any given point in this, watching this, I was like, I could not figure out at any point, I mean, what you said about the script and then what the director wanted, it really makes sense because, like, at any given point, I could never figure out the damn tone at all. Because it was like, is it, like, too cool for school? Is it, like, supposed to be sincere? Is it, like, supposed to be kind of like, you know, because kids are awful and terrible and shitty and blah, 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 blah? Or, like, is it because girls are just the worst, man? Or, like, what is, like, what, where were we going with this? And I was like, well, the answer to that is all of the things because I never actually picked one.
Yeah.
Because, like, some of the dialogue, you know, like, that quippy, like, trying to be too cool for school, like, I don't know. There's some like misogynistic kind of bullshit that's in there. That's just like, it's not even a style. It's just kind of like, it's like, man, you know, it just, I just don't like, was it the other one? Was it that one with the, was it the Rose McGowan one? The, Jawbreaker? Uh-huh. Or it's like, it's that same kind of a thing where you're like, so is your thesis that they should be punished because they're girls? Like, I don't know if you know that's what you're saying, but like, it's just weird. So like this entire damn movie, it was like there was so much total weirdness that it was sort of like I couldn't get that part of it nailed down. The dynamic between Brittany Murphy and the dad character, and like kind of figure that out, and like the thing with Jay Moore, like are they in college? Like, it was like yeah. Are they in college or like what is happening? There's lockers. I don't understand. So like no part of that jives worth a good goddamn. And then like by the end of the reveal, you get like, so Jay Moore is like completely screwed up in the head about this thing, and so therefore he's going to exact revenge on the children of the people, whatever. And it's like, except for the like, isn't at least two of the people that get killed like don't fall into that thing that he stated as his reason for doing it? Like,
his thesis was that, like, to punish the whole town, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it wasn't
okay.
Just the people who were involved.
Okay. Well, that's fair. But it was just sort of like, but I was kind of like, when he says, like, this is my plan. Like, well, you're not super good at executing a plan there, Jim Moore. It was like, you know, the one scene I'll give it great credit for, the one scene that I really thought was terrific was the scene where she inexplicably goes over to his house, and then she's like, oh, do you need help? And she's like, sure. And then like, you know, brings the chest inside, and like, you're like, what's in the chest? Like, yeah, it could be your dad.
Could be mine too.
Yeah, it's just like, what the fuck?
By the way, with the school, as soon as we got to his classroom, I was like, welcome to College High School.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is exactly what it was. And then, like, I had halfway through, I remembered the whole thing with Jay Moore. Like, oh, shit. Is this going to be like super cringy Ace Ventura level transphobic? Like, yeah, not really. He's not trans, and that's why he's fucked up. Like, it's not Sleepaway Camp, right? He's just dressing like his mom to freak them out. But still, and by the end of it,
that was the one thing they accidentally didn't do wrong. Didn't do wrong was like they just stumbled into not being shitty.
The funny thing, when at the end when he's just got the wig, he looks like Trent Reznor, like so much. Apparently, if you put long black hair on Jay Moore, he just looks like Nine Inch Nails.
Okay, that reminds me of a thing I saw. It's on my list of things to try to see if I can find it. But somebody made a picture. You know Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, he did that one, the brooding goth guy sketch, whatever. So somebody took a picture of Bruce McCullough in that wig with the shirt looking all broody, and then put the Danzig logo above it and made it into a shirt. I was like, oh my god, nobody will get it, but it's so great. But yeah, no, I was super expecting that to be a big third act thing of like I dress up in women's clothing because I'm fucked in the head, like blah 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 blah. And it's like, I was like, super expecting that to be a thing, and then I was just like, it was not a thing, and I was like, wow, well done. Yeah.
So like there are moments in this that I liked. They are few and far between. But like, I love the foot toe biting scene because it is the weirdest shit. I love that they blow the dude's hand off at the end when he grabs the girl by the hair.
Oh, yes.
And yeah. So they just like, you know, shoot him until his hand just detaches from his body. Like, that shit's pretty fun. I actually like the scene where she's running from the killer across the science lab and just throwing every single thing she can and just screaming like a howler monkey. Like, that is some brave shit. And I love that level of fight in like a Final Girl. Yeah, that would be fun. But the rest of it is, yeah, it wasn't quite what I remembered. And then at the end, they have the, like, in lieu of a stinger, they just have the water in the reservoir and the waterfall turn red. Just cause.
Yeah, well, sure.
Like, cause metaphor. But like, mom is still out there theoretically.
Yeah.
Because she was in the house when the house burned down. No, when the sheriff came.
Yes.
Sheriff Michael Biehn, who was like, guys, I was in Alien and Terminator and now fucking this. Okay.
Yeah, he has a few on his resume that are a little touch and go, but
him and Michael Ironside are just like, we used to, man. Shit. Yeah, so I like, definitely these days I wouldn't waste a whole bunch of oxygen defending this, nor would I would tell people they gotta see it, but it was fun going back to it. Just 90s slasher was such a weird thing, and it's weird to see it start to pop up again. Like, fuck you. That's some nostalgia we just don't need. So, yeah, for me, it is like I'm going to say 5.5 out of 10. Jay Moore is not as funny in this as he usually is. So there was this random night in LA that I went to a comedy club, and I went because Jay Moore was on the docket, and it was just like my friend had some comp tickets and we could pick a night, and that was the only name I recognized. And behind me was Eddie Murphy, and you could tell just because anytime something was even a little bit funny was the Eddie Murphy laugh.
Oh, sure.
And then after Jay Moore, it was, folks, we have a special guest tonight, and it was Bob fucking Saget, who got up and did a filthy, filthy, like, 20-minute set. So when I think of Jay Moore, that's what I think of.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Matt, do you have any other thoughts on this guy?
Oh, sorry.
I just told you I wasn't going to call on you, but haha.
You did. Can you hear
more me? The fool you for trusting me.
Can you hear
me. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then I am continuing to pray for death. Jay Moore, asshole. Bob Saget, saint. I mean, I feel like there's been like two or three movies. Like, fuck, Cobra Kai did that, right? Like, you know, it's just like get laid or get dead. And it was just like, well, best fuck, then season 3 finale. Like, you know, it's like, ah, that's cool.
I mean, so, as much as like fuck Bill Maher these days, that the old joke absolutely. About like it's always virgins they sacrifice, you notice they never sacrifice the sluts. Like, oh, you don't want to go out with me? Oh, well, are you going to the sacrifice later? Am I going? I'm one of the judges.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, that's the thing. You mentioned the thing about with Jay Moore or whatever. It's just sort of like, I just, yeah, there's a lot of guys that kind of came up in that time frame that, like, you know, there's the Bob Sagets, and then there's a lot of David Spades, and there's a lot of these other useless hangers on, the, you know, what's the goat guy,
Jim Brewer, Rob Schneider.
Rob Schneider's another useless one.
Like, they're just desperate to stay relevant.
Yeah, and they did one funny thing 30 years ago that somebody else wrote for them, and then they just. Yeah, they have nothing to bring to the table worth a good goddamn, and so
here's the weird point I'd argue. I would argue that if you have the one thing, good for you. If you exploit that thing and use that as a tool to become an awful voice of something, then fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, and so like it's like, all right, fine, if you know, like Rob Schneider, I don't know, if the farthest he got is like copy man, okay, fine, that's cool. But if you want to go, oh, copy man, also fuck black people, then like, yeah, okay, but like, don't, I hope you die.
But don't watch his most recent comedy special, which supposes that since he's married to somebody of a different race, then therefore he can have the most backwards ass dumb fucking
right. But that's exactly
opinions about everything.
That's exactly it, though. Is like, okay, cool. Have a one note character and get rich on it. That's great. But just don't be an asshole, you know.
Well, and I think part of the problem with a lot of these guys, and maybe Jay Moore less so, because he wasn't really in that realm. But like the problem with a lot of these guys is that, like, you know, like the Jim Brewers of the world, like he was marginally funny at best, to some degree, even to Adam Sandler too. But like, he had enough going on. He had enough going on. But like, a lot of where they came from was that was material people provided them. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, you are the performer, but like, it's material being given to you, and it's just sort of like, and so it's like time and place. It's sort of like, you know, I often wonder about that, looking back on like the late '80s into the '90s, as far as like stand-ups and people from SNL and people from other kinds of things.
It's like, it's the question being asked and the answer being given, and those are two different things, because I think Lorne Michaels certainly is the latter, whereas the public expectation is the former. And I think that those don't necessarily align. And it's not the person's fault that is stuck in the middle trying to simply pay rent.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's that part of it. I mean, like, I always, you know, like, you know, when I was 20-year-old idiot, you know, like, the idea of selling out was a god awful thing. And then when you get to be an actual adult, you go, like, every time I see somebody I know in a commercial, or I see or hear a song from some band in some commercial, whatever else, I always makes me happy now. I'm like, that means that they could pay their bills, and like, that makes me really happy. Like, you know, Jocelyn Donahue's a friend, and she's a terrific person in general. She's really, really cool girl. When she's in that Fitbit, when I see that Fitbit commercial, it always makes me happy, always, because that means that she was able to cover expenses and then probably could be able to get out on a film shoot for 6 weeks, where maybe they had a smaller budget or whatever else, but she got to make sure that her, you know, power and water stayed on, and that she had a roof over her head. Like, God bless her. Awesome. Fucking A. That's great. But 20-year-old me didn't get that concept. And it's sort of, so it's kind of like, it's one of those things that, like,
That's a rough one to try to justify to your younger self.
Oh, yeah. No, I would love to sit out. I would love to sit out with 20-year-old Charlie. I'd be like, let me explain to you how things actually work.
For fuck's sake, there's nothing I would like less than to sit down with 20-year-old
Matt. Let me amend that. It would be a one-way conversation, because 20-year-old me would be wearing a gag. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear a single fucking word out of his mouth.
Well, one of them would just be punching. Actually, you know. And honestly, I'm not even sure which.
Well, and then so then just to kind of to bring it back home with a thing like this, when this got made in 22, this was 2000, was Jay Moore at that time enough of a thing to where there was a little bit of like a, I don't want to say stunt casting, that's not the right term, but like it was like enough of being like, oh, hey, it's that guy from the thing, and he does the impersonation of Chris Walken and blah, 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 or was he just like any other kind of person just getting a role in a thing? Like, it just makes me wonder, you know, if he had enough attention going that would have been a valid thing or not.
The fact that you just mentioned it is the first time I've heard that he does a Walken impression.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah,
like, the first I've heard of it. And so to me, like, he is the guy that was the sort of embittered comedian that did, what was it, Gasping for Airtime was his autobiography.
Hmm. Oh, shit. Oh, golly, D. Wilkers.
Right? Like,
yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
15 years ago, something like that? But at the same time, like, I've watched him do things since then where I go, you know what? No, you're quality. You're good. So I would say I would lean on the side of Jay Moore being
good draw.
Yeah, dude draws money. And like, that's a guy that can, like, you know, pull his weight and do his thing. So, like, I think, give my druthers, like, you know what? It's just like, okay, there was a time where I dismissed him, but that I no longer do.
Yeah. I think in general though, like, it's, yeah, I think it's one of those things where, until somebody proves, I think it's shitty to assume that anybody from 89 to 2001 that is still trying to do something now is automatically a crap stick. Like, that's just, I don't think that's, I think prove yourself to be a crap stick and then we'll go with it. But it's sort of like, it's, I think it would be kind of crummy to do that. Similarly to the mid 2000s, like, was it, what's his nuts from Napoleon Dynamite? John, what's his fucking name?
Cater?
Wick. John Hader. Yeah, that sounds right, Joshua. I think that's right. Where, like, you know, Napoleon Dynamite has sort of become this, like, ubiquitous cultural whatever. But to his credit, though.
No, not Bill Hader.
No, the guy in Napoleon Dynamite. The guy who played Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, fuck that. That actor.
No. But to his credit, like, he was in other movies. Like, he was in that movie with Ruffalo and with Reese Witherspoon, Just Like Heaven. And he kind of plays this fun sort of character. He's popped up in a couple other things that Chris and I have watched the last couple of years. I'm like, oh, you know, so, like, it doesn't become like an ass cancer like Tom Green or something like that. Or sort of like where just.
No,
sort
if
of,
you
like,
give him something to do, he can do it.
That's what I mean. And so it's one of those things where, like, I don't think it's like hand over foot to, like, you know, just like automatically assume like every single one of these guys is kind of a rapey dinosaur. Like, I don't think that's really the thing, but it's sort of
sorry about rapey dinosaur.
Rapey dinosaur.
Open the door. Get on the floor.
Hang on.
The Diplodon has
myself.
The Diplodon has filed a suit. So
Dilophodon.
Yes, Dilava, yes. But to put a cap on it, like, to his credit in this, it does look like there's enough of a commitment to, like, okay, well, at least this is what we're doing. And, like, yeah, give him credit for that for sure. You know, I'll give him that, you know. Matt, did you put a number on it, or did I interrupt you?
I need to recuse myself.
Fair enough.
We'll call Matt a present.
Yes, he has voted present. What about you, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, the revisiting this didn't help. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's enough in it that. Oh yeah, that was the very last thing I was gonna say, which is that, like, you know, I am, and will always be a great defender of Valentine. I fucking love that movie. I think it's great, but I think stylistically, it's interesting to look at this one next to that, because I think Valentine had a lot of stylistic choices and some interesting stuff with lighting and camera stuff and some interesting stuff going on. Whereas, like, that's the one thing that gets me with this one too, with Cherry Falls, is like, it's not particularly attractive to look at. It's kind of ugly. Like, it's not appealing to the eye necessarily, and that's par for the course from that range from, you know, 96 to 2003. But, like, you know, it's also just ugly as sin to look at. And God bless Brittany Murphy. She deserved to have a full fucking career. She's a presence. But so yeah, I mean, there's some stuff in there that's enjoyable, but by and large, it's just a silly goddamn mess. So I would say, a plump 4 out of 10 college high school. Yeah, that's to say, 4 out of 10 matriculating badly.
I used to matriculate in the public library. Oof. Actually, let's talk about They Live in the Gray or Viven en el Gris. They Live in the Gray is like lady who can see ghosts kind of story. She works for Child Protective Services. She has a kid who died under sad circumstances that weren't her fault, but she feels like they are her fault. So psychic lady tormented by supernatural ghosts who can actually beat the shit out of you is where we're at here. But over the course of over 2 hours, we have a kind of a sixth sense kind of scenario. Not that she is dead. She's not, but the ghosts are just trying to tell us stuff, and if we just listen to them, then we can make things right and they go away. So, like, I feel like either this needed to be shorter or more original, because it made me think of, like, Stir of Echoes was like, it wasn't groundbreaking, but it was like 90 minutes of pretty tight stuff. Like, this needed to be either groundbreaking or longer or shorter.
I think you and I may be on the same page. I feel like this is one where I kind of spent the first hunk, like, getting acclimated to the universe. And then I went, pull the trigger. pull the trigger. Someone, please God, someone pull the trigger.
Yes.
You know, and I feel like they, and I think that's what you're saying, right, Josh? Like, yeah. It's just, it takes way too long to like get to the point of like, ah, here comes like thud. Because what I wanted was, I guess, what's the other shoot up fall, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Or the other shoot drop. Yeah.
Like the, yeah, sure. Something like that. Like, and so it was just like, I was waiting for like thud. And this movie really, I think they give you what, like an hour, maybe more before that.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like, dude, come on. Like, we know where you're going. Just do it.
Yeah. Or don't go there. Like, go somewhere new.
I'm sorry. I can't tell if I'm talking too long. All right, move on.
Oh, you're doing great.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's one of those ones where, and then, you know, there's some red herrings that sometimes it feels as though there's some cleverness there. And then there's sometimes where you're like, it felt like, yeah, like there's some of the Sixth Sense component to it. And there's a little bit of like, a little bit of the Stir of Echoes component to it. And there's a little bit of the, that Michael Keaton movie, White Noise, where there's a little bit of that in there too. And then, mm-hmm. So it's like, it just keeps going in these different directions on this red herring kind of component. But then like, you know, it keeps bringing us back to the unspeakably sad tragedy in her own life, and really skirts the line between being like evocative of that and respectful of that, and also just like really crass at points too, where I'm like, it's like, I don't think you're intentionally trying to be like really insensitive to people who have lost a child, but like kind of feels like it's sort of, yeah, that's weird. Like
there's a bit of a snub-nosed dog tail waggling.
Yeah, like a couple points, yeah. That feels very sincere and sweet, and like deals with it in the right kind of way.
But it doesn't. But it isn't always. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like it just kind of vacillates a little bit. Where like at times, I think if you're going to be horrific in dealing with the loss of a child and that kind of part of it, like go for it. Like I'm certainly not advocating for being a weenie about that. Like I think you really gotta go for it. And really kind of embrace what those feelings and what that damage really is. Like, you know, go for it for sure. Yeah, absolutely. But I think at times with this, it's like it kind of skirts that line a little bit. But then it also just keeps dancing around with the different things, like with the main family, with the daughter, with the bruises and the stuff and the strange happenings going on. And then it kind of cuts back and forth. And then she's kind of dealing with like, you know, her alternate kind of version of reality, because she keeps – well, it's not her fault, but like the movie keeps kind of shifting around, and like, you know, it's like, well, now she woke up here, and then this other thing happened, and like there's like no sense of time necessarily. Like it was like at points it like felt kind of dreamlike and not the best way in the world. I should also say in the middle of this that the lady in this, was it Michelle Krzyzewski, is like she's fabulous. Like she's put a hell of a career together. She's very hard working. It's obvious to, if you look at her credits and stuff. I mean, you know, homegirl works. And it's like, it's so, you know, like, I think she is doing the absolute best heavy lifting job that she can do with a script that has like 9 ideas and like 1.5 follow throughs. And it's sort of like, so I cannot fault her, because she I think, you know, she spends so much time in the middle of the camera where it's sort of like you can't escape that part of the story. Once it gets to the third act though, like the parallels between what's actually happening in that house and then like with her loss and whatever, it starts to feel a little more somber, a little bit more sober, and a little bit more, you know, like reasonable as it comes to that kind of that part of it. Which is good. Although, you know, as I was saying, like this felt longer than Roots. Mm-hmm. It just felt endless to me. And it's like, and I'm not going to fault her, because I think she just did the absolute best she could possibly do. But it was one of those things where it's sort of like, does it feel endless because it needs to be a longer story with one payoff, or does it need to be a more streamlined story, like picking one arc and then just kind of sticking with it? And I am kind of on the mind that, like, you know, maybe instead of being a miniseries, like, you know, to Josh's point, like, just kind of short it up and, like, focus the attention. Because as it stands, it's got way too many things going on. Like, you could cut out basically everything related to her agency thing that she works for. Like every single part of that is just,
it just gets her in the, it gets her to that house.
Well, no, right? It does. No, it totally does. But she could be in a, it could be a phone conversation in the car. Like, you know, I just texted you over the, I just sent over the encrypted file. This is whatever else. And it could have been 40 seconds and never.
I guess like they, the CPS guy doing his best, like grizzled police chief. Doesn't,
yeah, it just was utterly pointless. Wait. Like utterly pointless.
I think the problem though is you just, if you took the little sub-story in Sixth Sense about the mom who killed her daughter with Munchausen by proxy, right? And blew that out into a feature, that's kind of what you have here. And that's just not enough to hang a feature on. And it,
yeah, it's more of a drama at that point. It's kind of like, it's sad and it's horrific, but it's not. Yeah.
It's, by the end of it, it's like, this should, I was thinking like, this shouldn't be on Shudder. Like this should be on like TLC or, you know, Hallmark Channel. Like it's that thriller kind of thing where it doesn't really go after the meat of the story at all. And just leads to the place where you probably would have expected it was going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What you got there, Matt?
I think you're not wrong. I think this... God damn, the TLC comparison is kind of throwing me for a loop, because I think that is perhaps the most apt thing, right?
Yeah, I had like to chase that particular waterfall, yes.
Yes.
I didn't hate this watching it. I was, what do you call it, nonplussed, I guess, you know, watching it. But the TLC comparison, or the what would it be today?
Like Lifetime AMC
or Lifetime.
Lifetime. Or that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like if this was given a 40-second introduction by like Mario Lopez, you would just be like, all right. You know, and it would be the kind of thing that like a certain type of person could watch on their own, or they could watch it with their mother or whatever, but like it doesn't ask a lot of you as a viewer, and that is perhaps outside the purview of the things that we normally try to watch here. It didn't hit the benchmark, but it's like, it's fine. It's inoffensive. So like whatever the middle is that the,
yeah, I think that that's fair. Yeah. I don't think it ever gets into that territory of being like Jesus, like this is just like cement footed. Like this feels very, very inappropriate. And like what they're doing, like it's not in that area necessarily. You know, I wouldn't go that far by any stretch, you know, but it's just like, just a couple of points. I was like, ah, geez, this feels a little tone deafy. You know, like it's sort of like,
it's just kind of mild, you know, like the creepy factor is not super high. The gore is not real high. Like it is that kind of thriller versus horror, you know, like this would be marketed as thriller.
Well, and like, I mean, I kept thinking,
and that's okay saying, for a thing to be. It's just I was not expecting it on show.
Well, then also too, like the thing with the, like what the ghost is actually doing or what the other thing is going or whatever. I kept thinking like, is there going to be a third act reveal, like a What Lies Beneath situation where this other entity is like the girl that the guy, the husband has slept with, and she's trying to warn because he's no good or whatever. And I was like, they didn't go that route, but it started to feel like it had that kind of shape a little bit. But it didn't go that route. It didn't go that way necessarily, which is, you know, that's totally fine, you know, whatever. But yeah, I think mild is the right word for it. Like at any given point, I didn't feel like enough, you know, that's not very fair. I was gonna say I didn't feel enough emotional connection. Like, you know, it is what it is. Like something either gonna move you or it's not, and it's not necessarily the material's fault That being said, it's like it is spread real damn thin when it comes to that part of it. And also, too, like there's a couple of mechanics where some of the jumpy kind of moments that they call back to in the third act, it was like actually the ghost like protecting the little girl or whatever. And that's all well and good, but it's sort of like, you know, in a Lifetime movie kind of drama thriller, and then having kind of like the sort of moments is like, well, okay, the first one I'll give you, but then after that, it's like it starts to feel a little silly. You know, and it's also like also the central story is like, you know, the relationship between the two that lost the child and then whatever. And it's sort of like, I don't want to be that guy, but at a certain point, like somebody's got to tell a joke or like somebody's got to like smile at the, or something. Like I just at a certain point, like it either has to be just a straight up drama and then that's the story that we're telling, or there's got to be a little bit more something going on there to kind of like to kind of flush out the human part of it. But as it stands, just it kind of sits in second gear when it comes to the humans involved. And it's sort of like it's like so, and that may be my own thing, that may not be their fault, but it's just sort of like not everything has to have a bunch of quippy people. Like that was one of the great things about the new Batman movie, like there's not like they're like funny deputy, like there's just not that, there's just like good, you know. So not everything has to have that, certainly, but at a certain point, like I would have loved to the estranged husband guy to have like, you know, made a fart joke or something like that, and then have her kind of giggle or something, like just something to break up the somberness of that part of it. But yeah, that's a kind of a minor thing, I guess. Matt, did you have anything else, or do you want to slap a number on this, and then we take a quick break, and then we row or perhaps?
Oh, sweet, horrible Jesus! Is there the possibility of ending this?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Again, recuse myself.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I just got hit in the head a lot.
Yes, you are recused.
That's marked as present. That's okay.
I don't put that on my feet. Okay. Well,
fuck off. We enjoy your company. Eat shit. Yeah. I always just think of my dog, Rosie, though, who likes to go and dig in the snow for delicious frozen treats that she has left there for herself earlier in the day.
Ah.
And just going like, eat shit, Rosie. And her going, really? Thank you. You know what? I'm gonna. Anyway, yeah, this is like it's a 6.5 out of 10. It's just all context. Like it, like I watched the movie about the Munchausen by Proxy Girl that was on Hulu, and that was very Lifetime-y, but I was like, you know, it was sold as a thriller, and like we kind of knew it was going to be more like a V.C. Andrews, like Flowers in the Attic kind of sitch than a horror movie. But this was sold as a horror movie, and then it's not quite that. So I don't know. It's the kind of thing where you have to say that shitty thing of like, well, if you're a casual horror fan or, you know, someone who's just like into thrillers and stuff, then you like this, which is not really me doing the dick measuring thing. It's just, it is what it is. You know, I didn't like it. Some folks might. 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I would say the one that it likens to in my head enough is there's a Norwegian or Scandinavian one from about 5 years ago called Thelma, I think is how they pronounce it, where it's like it's pretty much a very heavy character drama, and then there's like a supernatural component to it, but like that doesn't really occur until like, you know, it doesn't really rear into the story in any meaningful way until like kind of and which is fine. Like that's okay, but it's not going to be one of those ones that you're like every 10 minutes you're going to get a supernatural beat where you're like really kind of on the edge and all that kind of stuff. Like it's just not that, you know. It's just that. And Thelma is a really terrific movie, and I was bummed that it didn't get a nomination for, because I guess Norway put it in as their pick for the Oscars that year of like for the foreign language thing. It didn't get. So I was bummed because it's an excellent film, but it's just not. It's not going to be one of those like popcorn-y kind of things. Like this is not that. So yeah, I mean, in that context, I mean, I would say that there's a lot that they did in this that was solid. It just sort of like, it just was spread real damn thin. And so a tightening and a focusing of the story and cutting out a lot of the meaninglessness stuff, and then really committing to, you know, what those scares feel like in the first half, to then like lay them out in the second half to like have that feel more like a relief, or to have more ownership from the viewer would be better. So, I mean, I would, you know, like I said, this was a journey. So I would say, like 5.5, I guess, you know, like a, you know, like not a, not like a, not like a thumping 5.5, but you know, kind of like a, just a 5.5 out of 10, 5.5 out of 10.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I'd say. Yeah. Out of 10.
You said it, brother. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll talk about Roe for a second.
Yeah.
Right, bye-bye. So next up we have Roe. It's a Malaysian movie. Haven't seen too many of those. Very beautifully made. It's about a family, mother and two kids, who lives in like kind of a hut in rural Malaysia, and they are visited by a creepy little girl, as we frequently find in horror movies, and she does some ominous shit and then offs herself, and then we kind of take off from there with the evil spirits and mysterious hunter. And man, I almost have a The Wailing situation with this, where I was like, Edgar Wright was raving about this. It's winning awards. And like, I could not invest. I was like, this is really pretty and I just don't care. It just keeps going. And then it was done. So yeah, full disclosure, I fell asleep like 20 minutes before it was over. And then I could not bring myself to turn it back on. So I looked up the ending on Wikipedia. And yeah, I didn't connect with this one. Sorry.
This one, there's a lot that I really like about this, but this one definitely felt as though I was telling a story to somebody, like a folktale, and then they wrote down a bunch of notes feverishly, and then they translated it into a movie. Because like this is about as folktale-y as you get in terms of like the plot contours and the setup of it, and much like a lot of real world, real old god type of folktales, like it's basically hopeless.
Yeah.
Like it's just sort of like, you know, once the curse is upon you, you just fuck sideways. And it's just sort of, it's kind of one of those type of folktales. And so it's kind of like, there is kind of a dreary march to the end in that regard. But as like, there's a lot of atmosphere to the thing that's like, I guess it was kind of like slow budget kind of thing. You know, it didn't feel like a bunch of idiots running around in a forest. Like it definitely had a lot of presence to it, which is really cool. But in terms of the folktale component, like, you know, there's some cultural touchstones that I didn't necessarily click in on, you know, 100%, but you know, it's you know, really kind of a lovely thing, even though, like I said, it is just kind of like one of those very, very deeply bummeristic type of folk tales where you're just sort of like, well, there's just no hope for any of these fucking people. Like, just from the onset, like, it was just sort of like, well, this is just not, it's going to be one of, it's either going to be the lady from across the river, or it's going to be the hunter guy, or a fucking tiger or something. Like, it's kind of, because they tease the tiger thing, they're like, well, it could be a tiger looking around, and mom's like, there's no tiger in these woods. I'm like, maybe a tiger in these woods, but
or if it was just Tiger Woods,
which is Tiger Woods like walking along with his gigantic teeth, him and George Kennedy. But like, you know, so it's like, so it's one of those things where it was like, it's gonna be one of these things. Like, it's just, it's, nobody's coming out of this on a sunshiny afternoon with a picnic. Like, it's just not going to be the thing. And you can kind of feel that just right at the beginning. Like, okay, well, this is just going to be one of those kind of stories. And, you know, to their great credit, I mean, like, everybody in this, like, I think from kids on through, like, I think everybody does a good job. Like, they're really, you know, nobody really is mugging or, like, you know, big over the top. Which sometimes you can see in some Korean and some South Asian things where you'll get one or more characters that's just gigantic. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, what is going on with this? With the big face and the big acting face and stuff. Like, Jesus. But so, like, there wasn't any of that, which is really kind of cool. Like, that scene, the one scene with the mother kind of sitting back on the porch early on with the lady across the river, like when they're kind of sitting and talking, whatever, like it's really neat. It just had like a really lovely texture to it and just felt very authentic and very grounded. And I don't know. There's just a lot about that that was really admirable. But then there's some cultural stuff that, you know, there's some things with the kids, and then there's references to the dead, like leaving different components like that, where it's just like I know they're saying more that I don't understand because I don't have enough familiarity or in their culture. And so it's sort of like there's some things here that I'm super missing because, like, I don't get it 100%. But, you know, and I like it, and, you know, maybe just because it wasn't 2.5 hours long, you know, the fact that there's some things that just don't really get articulated super well. I think it's probably okay. Had this been another half hour longer, like I maybe wouldn't be as okay with that. But as it stands, it stays brisk. And so there's things that are like the reverse burning tree kind of motif and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't know what's happening, but okay, well, we can't keep going from there. And like the shift of the camera with the trees and stuff and things like that were sort of like, okay, well, they did this once and I'm good. But if they just kept going like arty, then it would have been a little much. But yeah, as it stands, I mean, I did like this, but it does kind of feel like an oral folktale kind of translated to film.
I couldn't dug with it too much, and it's one of those where like I don't want to trash it and I don't want to rate it down because it just feels like it didn't connect with me, and that could be either of our faults. It's very well made, so yeah call it like a 6, you know, like a 6 out of 10. If for those who like this kind of thing, this is the kind of thing they will like.
Yeah, that's very well said. Yeah, I would say I'll go a little higher. Like, there's enough going on here that I really did like, and I really admire the generation and creation of atmosphere, because I just think, you know, I just don't think there's any excuse anymore for so much of the stuff that pops up on Amazon where they're like, oh, we just had a small budget. Like, fuck you, small budget. Like, you know, there's you can do a lot with an atmosphere if you're really determined to pull something out of it. So like a lot of this crap that pops up on Amazon, whatever, I'll watch half an hour of it, and it's just, you know, like I said, the idiots in the woods kind of thing, where it's just like there's just no try. And so like you watch something like this and it's beautifully crafted and really well realized across the board, and it's like, yeah, it's totally doable. So I really admire that part of it too, a kind of like a moving tapestry of a folktale. So I would say 7. I'd say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. To be a chicken in Malaysia.
Very Shakespearean, I feel. Let's take a quick break then, and we'll talk about what we're going to watch tomorrow. Tomorrow. Next show. Good. Yeah, we're all doing just fine. So next week we have just the most random-ass collection of films that the film universe has ever filmed. We're going to watch Wolf, the 90s movie with Jack Nicholson as a werewolf and Michelle Pfeiffer as Michelle Pfeiffer. And we're going to watch Eat Brains Love, the latest from Rodman Flender, the awesome named director of Idle Hands. And we're going to watch Livide, which is a kind of new French extremism thing that has been unavailable for like 10 years. So
yeah. We're
happy to watch all those. It's going to be Wolf and Eat Brains Love and Livid. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I will say bye.
This is Charlie Dunn Austin. let's see. Yeah, this is Charlie Dunn Austin. My brain went sideways there. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Just be good in general, for Pete's sake. So we got enough shit going on in the world. Just be decent if at all possible. All right, be good to yourselves, and then we'll talk shortage again. Before you know it, it'll be us.
Okay. Thereby hangs a dick. Anyway.
Christian and I had a lively conversation about the phrase that I use every once in a while, like so describing somebody as a pile of dicks, and she's like, well, is that like a bad thing? Like, well, I mean, obviously they'd be disembodied. Like, well, not necessarily. Like, you just have a bunch of dudes lined up with like dicks on the table. Like, well, then that's like a lineup. That's a different kind of a thing. A pile is a pile. And she's like, well, what if they're disembodied dicks? Like, well, that doesn't make it any better. It's like this whole conversation when Joe's asleep in the back seat talking about like the phrase pile of dicks or bag of dicks. And
Very fun. I mean, I guess if it was a big enough bag, you could have a bag of dicks that were still attached to dudes.
Yeah, that's true.
Hang on. I'm sorry. Sheriff Joe LaPio?
Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Is that the most offensive possible combination of the idea of a bag of dicks, but also the most apropos?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
All of this is going in the stinger.